Hey, this is Dre Silvertooth, the GM of Bad Heroes, here with my co-producer, Leanne Rose.
And today, we're bringing you a special recap episode of the story so far. Whether you're new to our podcast or just want to refresh your memory, we're going to give you a rundown of the main events that have happened in the last 25 episodes.
That's everything in the prologue, our first arc, the Forgotten Court, and the Return to Vire interlude. So, buckle in. Our story begins in the capital city of Vire, the Unholy Empire, which is one of the most influential nations in the known world. The House of Fain has sat on Vire's throne the last century. Queen Saphira rules presently. Her mother ruled before her and her grandmother before her. Each generation is rumored to be more terrifying than the last and more intertwined in the dealings of Hell. But, despite its dark reputation, Vire's capital is a hub of culture and knowledge, attracting people from all walks of life. Four strangers passing through the city are drawn into an adventure they are not at all prepared for. They are
Gideon Greyfrost, an aristocratic elf from a wealthy bloodline of draconic sorcerers who prefers books to people.
Tanrir Senni, an aloof half-elf druid who travels with his owl companion Rulthuin, working to better the land.
Iria Clawstrike, a wandering catfolk bard with a hangdrum on her belt and her head in the clouds.
And Wingetha Faldrum, a human ex-mercenary on a journey to explore the world.
Gideon, Tanrir, Iria, and Wingetha are conned and partially kidnapped by a dwarven grifter named Risk and his partner in crime, a half-orc named Bagheera, into an audience with Queen Saphira. They learn the queen is looking to hire outsiders to complete a difficult job and has been paying Risk and Bagheera a bounty to bring in fresh recruits.
Upon being escorted to the throne room, a lavish affair of obsidian walls, silk banners, and intricate flows of lava, our heroes meet the queen's royal advisors, two demons sent from the pit. Lord Zira, a captivatingly beautiful fury with ash-colored wings, and Talgron, a 9-foot-tall monstrosity covered in ice-blue spines. Lord Zira asks the new recruits to introduce themselves, and Talgron is not impressed. Queen Saphira, sitting on a throne shrouded in darkness, unleashes her loyal hellhound Dreska on the party to test their mettle. Battle ensues until the queen calls her hellhound off after deciding this party isn't completely incompetent. When the dust settles, Queen Saphira explains the job they've been drafted into. There are three great curses that plague mortals in Vire: vampirism, lycanthropy, and the eternal hunger. All are infectious, all are terrible. The royal alchemist Vesper is working to learn about these curses so that the House of Fain can better manage them. Queen Saphira orders our heroes to bring her one infectious individual afflicted with each curse, and gives the party a ring gate to send the captives back to the castle.
The queen grants each adventurer a token bearing the symbol of the House of Fain in case they need to prove their affiliation while carrying out the job. She also summons her familiar, a pit viper, to travel with Tanrir and keep an eye on the party. The queen's handmaid, a halfling named Danny, leads our heroes to an old supply shed to gear up. It's been mostly picked clean of adventuring supplies by previous parties, but amid the dust and broken equipment, Wingetha and Gideon pick up a few magical items, and Iria discovers a very cursed-looking mirror.
The party spends the night at Danny's cottage on the castle grounds. Over drinks, Danny reveals more of Vire's history to Wingetha. Since the House of Fain's rise to power, which is rumored to have coincided perfectly with the appearance of hellmouths all over Vire, everything that is holy has been systematically eliminated. There are no good clerics alive in Vire, and worship of the archdevils is encouraged. Danny confirms that the two demons in the throne room, Lord Zira and Talgron, were sent from the pit to advise the queen and speak for the interests of Hell. In short, Vire is the closest thing to Hell on Earth, and our heroes are right in the middle of it.
The next morning, Gideon, Tonrir, Iria, and Wingatha say their goodbyes to Dany before heading to Vesper, the Royal Alchemist's Manor, nearby on the castle grounds. The red brick mansion is covered in vines and home to a lot of cats.
Like, seriously, an unreasonable number of cats.
The entrance to the manor is guarded by a talking door, and the party has to solve a riddle to pass through. In the entryway, they meet a talking Maine Coon named Ivy. She leads the party upstairs to the alchemist's laboratory, where Vesper, a living skeleton, is in the middle of an experiment. The cauldron Vesper is working with explodes, scattering his bones across the floor.
Tonrir helps Vesper piece himself back together and informs him that they have been sent by the queen. Vesper briefs the party on their first mission. They must infiltrate the forgotten castle of Lord Oberon, a Moroi vampire who is rumored to have turned his entire court into his thralls over 100 years ago. To help with the mission, Vesper gives the party an inverted disguise undead scroll and a book of information and rumors about vampires. They head to the mansion's courtyard, where Vesper draws a circle of sigils, creates a portal, and sends our heroes into the great unknown.
Gideon, Tonrir, Iria, and Wingatha emerge from the portal to find themselves surrounded by the sand dunes of a vast desert. Vesper sends a letter through the portal, describing his desire to develop a cure for vampirism and requesting an additional cursed individual be brought to his home to be experimented on. While searching for Oberon's castle, the party is attacked by a giant spider tethered to an iron ring protruding from the sand. They manage to avoid getting eaten, and in a risky maneuver, Tonrir sets the spider free and it runs away. Our heroes explore around the iron ring and uncover a stained glass window at the top of a buried castle tower. Wingatha smashes the window and sand pours into the room below, carrying the party with it.
In a dark room at the top of a tower, our heroes encounter a prisoner named Nyx, a catfolk dampier who is also hunting Lord Oberon.
Dampiers are the half-undead offspring of vampires and mortals.
Yes. So, the dashing tiger Nyx gains Iria's trust. She frees him from his shackles and everyone escapes the room before it fills completely with sand. Nyx explains that he is a vampire hunter with a personal vendetta against Lord Oberon, and that he was captured while hunting him. He agrees to join the party under the condition that Oberon must die.
Gideon, Wingatha, Tonrir, Iria, and Nyx head deeper into the crumbling castle, where they are attacked by a vampire spawn, a former servant turned into a mindless thrall by Lord Oberon. They manage to subdue her with a stake to the heart, but Wingatha is injured in the fight. After debating what to do next, they decide to hide her deanimated body in a wardrobe. When a Moroi vampire dies, all of his thralls become full vampires in their own right. Wingatha makes a deal with Nyx to help him kill Oberon, and after the deed is done, they will return to the wardrobe and send the newly formed vampire to Queen Saphira. While searching the storeroom, our heroes discover a handful of RSVPs to an upcoming event called the Eternal Masquerade.
The party continues to explore the castle, heading further underground. In a dusty library, Gideon finds Oberon's journal and reads an entry from its pages. The journal entry describes Oberon's loneliness in Undeath and his desire to find a romantic partner. It also mentions someone named Thalia as a rash mistake. This evidence of Oberon's desperate bid for love leads Tonrir to theorize that the Eternal Masquerade is an attempt to cast a wide net for potential suitors.
Deeper into the castle, the heroes enter a torchlit circular chamber with an open casket resting in its center. A mysterious humming echoes through Wingatha and Iria's minds, growing louder as they approach the coffin.
Iria looks inside the casket and sees the shriveled husk of a woman, with long red hair and an elaborate black opal dress. A red rose has been placed beside the wooden stake protruding from her heart. Then, before anyone can stop her, Iria is taken by a sudden desire to remove the stake. She pulls it out, and the woman in the casket grabs and bites Iria. regaining her life force as she drains blood from the catfolk's neck. Fully awakened and revitalized, the vampire gets to her feet and drops Iria to the floor. Gideon recognizes her as Lady Thalia, the mistake mentioned in Oberon's journal. Our heroes attempt to fight her, but their attacks are unsuccessful and they eventually learn that Thalia also intends to kill Lord Oberon, as revenge for turning her into a vampire against her will. They reach an uneasy truce and part ways.
In need of rest, the party spends the night in the castle and patch themselves up. The next morning, they move to infiltrate the upcoming masquerade and launch a surprise attack on Lord Oberon. Gideon changes into a court gown, and Tonrir uses magic to encase her in ice armor and make her cool to the touch. Then, they cast the inverted disguise undead scroll provided by Vesper to give Gideon the appearance of a vampiric noblewoman, so that she can distract Oberon while the rest of the party prepares to strike.
The sound of bats swarming through the castle signals the return of Oberon and his thralls from their nightly hunt. And waltz music signals the beginning of the masquerade. After navigating a trapped hallway, our heroes reach the foyer and see a guest passing through. Gideon grabs a mask from a table of masquerade masks by the entrance to complete her disguise, and busts through the double doors into the ballroom. The ballroom is sweeping and grand, with crystal chandeliers and marble floors, and 10 vampire spawn twirling and dancing in pairs. They wear masks and beautiful finery, but their expressions are completely, ominously blank. And past the thralls, on a raised platform at the far end of the room, stands Lord Oberon and 4 vampire guests.
Gideon pulls one of the thralls into a skillful dance at the center of the ballroom, drawing Oberon's attention. In a whirl of light and music, Oberon cuts in and sweeps Gideon into a frighteningly close dance. Back in the foyer, Tonrir, Wingatha, Iria, and Nyx also put on masks and sneak behind the curtain spanning the edge of the ballroom, while Gideon acts as a distraction. But in a quiet moment, Iria sneaks a kiss with Nyx.
Lord Oberon is instantly taken by Gideon, who introduces herself as Amara, her older sister's name. Oberon uses magic to levitate Gideon and himself as they dance through the air. One of the vampiric guests, a dark elf who had been courting Oberon, is insulted that Gideon has stolen the show and storms off. All the while, Wingatha, Tonrir, Iria, and Nyx creep into position, ready to strike.
At the end of their dance, Oberon discovers a very out-of-breath Gideon is not a vampire at all, but mortal, when he catches her taking a deep breath. But he is so enamored that he moves to turn her into a vampire on the spot. Wingatha bursts out from her hiding spot to attack Oberon, and all hell breaks loose.
Wingatha tries to stab Oberon but misses, and Oberon uses mind control to turn her into his bodyguard instead. Oberon flees, Gideon in tow, with the rest of the party in pursuit. Iria and Nyx manage to break the mind control spell on Wingatha, but it's too late. Oberon gets Gideon alone, and, confessing that he would do anything to seize happiness, he bites her, rapidly draining her life force and bringing her within an inch of death. And then Oberon screams and releases Gideon. And he's bleeding from a huge bite on his thigh. There's a blur of black smoke in the shape of a hyena, and Thalia appears at Gideon's side to tell Oberon, "You shouldn't have done that."
Back upstairs, Tonrir, Iria, Wingatha, and Nyx are facing down 10 thralls in the ballroom, ordered by Oberon to attack them. Iria and Nyx fend them off while Tonrir heals Gideon, and Wingatha cannonballs herself at Oberon. Oberon retreats to the ballroom with Thalia in pursuit. As Oberon and Thalia duke it out, the remaining vampire guests take their leave. As our heroes regroup, Oberon gains the upper hand over Thalia, and then Nyx, and with their allies down, the situation seems dire. But, in a burst of rage, Tonrir summons Fury of the Sun and deals a tremendous amount of damage to Oberon. The vampire lord begins to fall, but then something strange happens.
Oberon rises above the dance floor and tells the party they are fools to hunt him. If he can't see the light of day again, well, then neither will any of them. And then he releases his control over his thralls in order to cast a spell. The lavish ballroom vanishes, and every one of the heroes is left alone in their own personal nightmare. Gideon dreams she is in her family library, surrounded by books, but she is unable to read. Iria dreams she is on a stage, in front of the most important people in her life, but her performance is causing them pain. Tanrir recalls the worst moment of his life, when the village and forest he was raised in caught fire. And Wingatha dreams of a time she was trapped, completely alone, in a cage. Each of the heroes is confronted with their greatest fear, and it is up to each of them to make it out alive.
Iria finds herself surrounded by catfolk, her parents, her ex-partner, and her childhood best friend in her treetop home, and sits on the precipice of remembering the terrible event that led to her exile. But she resists the bleak memory and instead focuses on the first time she felt hope after leaving home, starting a new life in Vire. Harnessing that bright memory, Iria escapes Oberon's mind control and wakes up.
Wingatha struggles with the bars of a cramped, claustrophobic cage and the memory of being captured and left to rot in a prison, with the knowledge that she may never again see the sun. But she is able to summon a memory of survival and hope that came after, standing on a ship, perfectly free, with the world open to her, and return to the battle and to the waking world.
Gideon navigates a familiar library in her family home, unable to understand the books she finds so comforting and stumbling into a painful memory. Her older sister, Amara, stands with her mother, Cassandra, and her mother's partner, Reyna. Together, the three most important people in Gideon's life decide her fate, to leave the Greyfrost Manor, forced out into the world on her own. Gideon pushes the memory to shift into a conversation with Amara, in which her sister motivates her to wake up and hand that gaudy vampire his ass.
Tanrir suffers through the traumatic memory of his druidic village burning to the ground, and relives the intense grief that followed the loss of his family and his home. But a recollection of new life, the moment that he found his animal companion Rulthuin in the ash of the fallen forest and nursed the baby owl back to health, gives Tanrir the strength to break out of Oberon's spell and free his mind from overwhelming despair.
Back in the world of the waking, our heroes spring into action. Iria casts a bardic spell to bring Nyx out of his nightmare. Wingatha, wearing a pair of enchanted slippers, runs up the wall to the second-story walkway, where she finds one of Oberon's coffins and lights it on fire. As Gideon and Tanrir resume their attacks, Wingatha rallies the newly freed thralls to help destroy their former captor, appealing to the goodness within them.
As the vampire thralls climb the ballroom walls and slash away at Oberon's remaining health, Iria uses spoken word to motivate her allies, that magic in her performance strengthened by Thalia's eerie humming. Gideon finds her feet on the bloodied marble floor. Barely clinging to consciousness, Gideon faces down her attacker with the words, "You made me feel weak. You thought you could enslave me. You thought you could kill me. But I am a Greyfrost, and bigger monsters than you have tried. You are out of your league, Oberon." And casts Snapdragon Fireworks, dealing the final blow to Oberon in a blaze of pyrotechnics.
With Oberon finally dead, his spell holding back the weight of the desert is lifted, and the sand above begins to crush the underground castle. Wingatha rushes to rescue the vampire they left bound and staked upstairs, while the rest of the party works with Nyx, Thalia, and the remaining thralls to escape the collapsing ballroom through a tunnel leading to the surface.
Sunlight finds the heroes facing a moral dilemma. One of these vampires must be sent back to Saphira to complete their mission. But there's no way to know what would befall them once turned over to the queen. Should they send Thalia, who has fought at their side against Oberon and rescued Gideon from certain death? Or should they randomly damn a newly freed thrall, one of Oberon's many victims, to an uncertain fate, just as they've had a taste of freedom? There is no good answer, so Gideon creates one.
Gideon steps back into the darkness, blood smeared across her hand, and prompts the small horde of vampires to show her who they really are. Two of the vampires attack her in a fit of bloodlust and are dexterously swept through the ring gate and delivered to Saphira. Sufficiently intimidated, the other 8 freed thralls agree to await a cure for vampirism and let the heroes go in peace.
In the calm that follows, Nyx pulls Wingatha aside to discuss the future of the remaining vampires. He suggests that if they had someone to protect them, mostly from themselves, they might be able to break the cycle of abuse that Oberon perpetuated. Nyx produces the pendant Oberon had been wearing and explains its purpose, enabling one to hide, even from magical detection. He suggests that Wingatha use the pendant to escape her contract with Saphira and lead the young vampires into hiding, preventing them from doing harm to humanity while they await a cure. Wingatha agrees to this new purpose and asserts that these are the people she wants to fight for now.
Iria catches a moment alone with Nyx, and the Dampier Tiger expresses his deep affection and infatuation with her. Nyx is transparent about his polyamorous identity and promises that, even though he has a husband, Iria would be treated as an equal. They share an embrace, and Iria agrees to visit him.
The young vampire the party first encountered and stored in the wardrobe upstairs, now docile and gentle, volunteers to return to Vire and help Vesper develop a cure. Thalia joins the heroes as well, seeking purpose after Oberon's demise. After a heartfelt goodbye with Wingatha and Nyx, Tonrir, Gideon, and Iria open up the portal and return with Thalia and the young vampire, Farah, to the capital city of Vire.
The 3 heroes rematerialize in Vesper's courtyard, accompanied by the 2 vampires. Thalia and Vesper knew each other, back when they were both alive, and reacquaint themselves, agreeing that Thalia will stay with Vesper and utilize her knowledge of alchemy to assist him in his pursuits. Farah awkwardly introduces herself and is left in Vesper's care.
Dany greets the party enthusiastically, but finding them worn down physically and emotionally by their battle with Oberon, lets them rest before meeting with the queen. Mulling over old memories the recent battle stirred up, Tonrir asks about a keep of records, hoping to find out more about the destruction of his forest home. Dany shares that there is a keep of records open to the public in Vire, but hints that it is important to remember that written history can be changed.
After resting up, the party plunges once again into the heart of Vire's capital to stand in the lava-lit obsidian throne room. Queen Saphira greets them, flanked as before by her demonic advisors, and congratulates them on a job well done. Her serpentine familiar, carried by Tonrir throughout the Forgotten Court, merges with her once again as her tattoo, and Saphira reveals that the snake, Tassir, shares his memories with her. Now, with a more intimate understanding of the heroes and a recognition that Wingatha has slipped out of her grasp, she considers the remaining 3 party members carefully.
Gideon glares at Saphira with open distaste and thinks silently that this is not how a true leader would rule. As if reading Gideon's thoughts, Saphira steps for the first time down from the platform containing her advisors, her hellhound, and her throne to face Gideon head on. Saphira asserts that the Grey Frosts are a lineage with delusions of grandeur. So before Gideon thinks about how Saphira runs her kingdom, maybe she should ask herself why she doesn't have one.
Gideon grows her claws in response, but an assassination attempt interrupts the confrontation, a poisoned dagger sinking into Queen Saphira's stomach. The assassin is quickly neutralized by Lord Zira and the living suits of armor that line the throne room, while Gideon moves to protect Saphira with magical armor.
Dany rushes to tend to Saphira, but the queen brushes her off and returns to business as usual, seemingly unaffected by the poison. Gideon, reflecting on how her home has fallen under the control of the House of Fain in the last century, takes advantage of the queen's promise to answer one question honestly. What does Saphira know of the fall of Silverscale?
The queen responds that its fall was before her time, but promises to reach out to Gideon with the truth. The heroes are dismissed until their next mission, under the condition that they stay in Vire's capital, which Saphira boasts is the best place in the world.
Gideon, unwilling to wait for Saphira's answer, decides to seek out Vire's library so she can research the answer for herself. Tonrir, his heart heavy with questions about the destruction of his own home, follows along.
Dany leads them to the Great Library of Vire, 7 floors of gorgeous architecture and extensive literary collections. Gold letters engraved on the library's far wall read, "Dedicated to Queen Aurelia of the House of Fain, first of her line. Commissioned by Queen Callista of the House of Fain, Grand Patron of the Arts and Sciences, so that Vire may partake in the knowledge and cultures of the world."
Also portrayed in large, colorful tapestries, Tonrir and Gideon observe the legacy of Vire's 6 most recent rulers. Saphira's grandmother, Queen Aurelia of the House of Fain, is shown to have the longest reign of 86 years. Her children Livia, Sabina, and Cyrus all had strikingly short rules, between 6 months and 2 years. Then Queen Callista, who looks so much like Saphira they presume her Saphira's mother, is shown to have ruled 31 years before Saphira's reign, which has gone on for 15 years at present. Tonrir and Gideon exchange glances and share the quiet suspicion that all is not as it seems in Vire. Gideon attempts to navigate the enormous library on her own to little success, and eventually Tonrir catches up to her, and both are steadied by the other's presence. While searching the overwhelmingly large history section, they encounter a Cambion, the child of a demon and a human, who introduces themselves as Zaylin. This kind historian helps them track down information on their fallen homes, but what they find appears to be a sugar-coated retelling of the truth, suggesting that Tonrir's forest was always part of Vire, and that the nation of Silverscale, following a series of successful diplomatic meetings, joined Vire willingly.
These half-truths do not sit well with the heroes, and after a warning from Zaylin that there are eyes and ears everywhere, but that a more accurate record may exist elsewhere for those close to the crown, Gideon and Tonrir use the queen's symbol to gain access to a hidden basement.
Meanwhile, during her first night in the capital, Iria heads to Vesper's house to take him up on his offer to translate the symbol she found on that very cursed-looking mirror in the supply shed. Grateful for all the party has done to advance his research, Vesper gets right to work and leaves Farah and Iria to play cards with his poltergeist. Farah turns out to be a sweet, awkward soul, grateful that the party spared her in Oberon's castle, and Iria and Farah become fast friends. After a spell, Vesper explains that the symbols in question are abyssal, the language of devils and demons, and translate roughly into fool and release.
Back in the library, Gideon and Tonrir descend into a cavern of dusty tomes and seek out true records on the fate of their respective homes. Eventually, they sit side by side, with matching books open in front of them. The details in these texts ring more true. Diplomatic meetings with the sovereign nation of Silverscale all failed, and Tonrir's forest was once untouched by Vire. But the only explanation for their fall is code 463.
Tasir, the queen's snake, finds them researching and speaks to them in Saphira's voice. She congratulates them on getting this far on their own and reveals the meaning of the code. The reason Tonrir's forest was burned and Gideon's nation was conquered, the original Silverscale collapsed into ruins, is this. They were destroyed to make way for the expansion of Vire.
In the month that follows, the 3 heroes go their separate ways in Vire's capital. Tonrir struggles with a deep sadness in the wake of this revelation, but discovers an old friend from his village of Rulthuin at work in the royal preserve. Tonrir is welcome to an enormous collection of flora and fauna from every biome by archways bearing the inscription, Royal Preserve, commissioned by Queen Aurelia of the House of Fane, first of her line, Hellbringer and founder of the Unholy Empire, so that Vyr may appreciate the wonders of the natural world.
It is in the temperate forest that Tonrir finds his mentor, Silen, a druidic tree singer who greets him warmly. In the shadow of a crowned statue and innumerable trees, they discuss the destruction of their home and their forest's future. Silen speculates that it was hellfire that burned their home, because the forest has not been able to recover. Tonrir asks about a relic, the Urdur Nthal, rumored to amplify druidic powers and help living things grow. Silen confirms its existence, but insists that to wield it, in the hope of restoring their home, Tonrir would have to grow far more powerful. With this purpose as his guiding light, Tonrir throws himself into training and learns all that Silen can teach.
Her first week in the capital finds Iria performing for a crowd in one of Vyr's beautiful outdoor amphitheaters. Her spoken word is a lyrical reflection on the root of her nightmare in Oberon's castle, the pain she caused her loved ones before being exiled from her home. Iria reveals to the crowd that she betrayed her best friend, her family, and her pride because she was following a bow. Her blind loyalty to her ex-girlfriend, Jasmine, cost her community its most valued possession, the essence of Melos, a relic that imbued young catfolk with a special connection to an instrument. Iria acknowledges that her mistake has robbed future generations of a lifelong gift and vows to make it right. Following her act, Iria is approached by Lord Zira, one of the two demonic advisors who counsel Queen Saphira. Zira claims to be an established patron of the arts and, moved by Iria's performance, offers to help her in exchange for future favors. Ultimately, she agrees, and under Zira's wing, Iria grows tremendously into an artist of sound skill and acclaim in Vyr's cultured capital.
Gideon, having sent word to her family, spends time in a quiet district on the outskirts of the capital, among the muted grandeur of fallen chapels. In an oft-overlooked shop of rare and antique books, Gideon's older sister Amara finds her and holds her tight, deeply impressed at the contents of her journal and her little sister's newfound strength. The pair walk through an old battlefield, a somber background for a difficult conversation. Gideon shares the revelation that the original city of Silverscale, their childhood home, was destroyed by Vyr before being conquered, a truth contrary to what their mother, Cassandra, insists occurred. Amara deduces that their mother lied to them by saying they were assaulted by unknown assailants and joined Vyr willingly to prevent her children from rebelling and meeting the same end as their late father. But Sebastian's pride runs strong in both daughters' veins, and Amara insists that Silverscale is their birthright and that this is not over. Saphira is going down.
Amara, a seasoned warrior, trains Gideon in the art of combat and expands her understanding of their shared bloodline magic. Gideon also takes an interest in necromancy as a way to expand her magical range, as it has natural crossover with ice magic.
At the end of the month, Gideon, Tonrir, and Iria meet back up at Dany's cottage ahead of their briefing with Queen Saphira. On their way to the castle, they stop by the royal armory to spend some of the hard-earned coin they received for completing the first mission. The armory is run by an orcish artificer named Sogarim, and unlike the rundown shed the party visited before, it is well-stocked with a variety of enchanted items and basic adventuring goods and gear. Tonrir befriends the artificer, but chaos ensues when Gideon manipulates Iria into knocking over an elaborate display of swords in a bout of pettiness. Sogarim nearly kicks everyone out of his workshop, but Iria manages to get back in his good graces by complimenting his poetry.
As they leave the armory, Iria decides to swing by the shed to investigate the symbols on the mirror Vesper had translated. She goes inside with Tonrir and Dany, while Gideon waits outside. While inspecting the mirror, Iria hears muffled banging and shouting coming from inside the glass. and she reads the symbol for release out loud in Abyssal.
A wild-looking woman with gray skin and bright red hair tumbles out of the mirror. After some confusion, the stranger introduces herself as Riva and insists that she got sucked into the mirror while doing a job for the Queen of Vire. Danny holds Riva at knife point, demanding to know which queen, because she has never seen her before. Riva responds that she was hired by Queen Aurelia and learns that Queen Aurelia died 46 years ago, and she has been trapped in that mirror for over 100 years.
Riva, who is a Kyall, a race of people descended from humans in the Shadow Plane, tags along with the party to meet Queen Saphira in the throne room. The queen has a headache and seems visibly distracted, and she briskly tells the heroes their next mission is to hunt werewolves. Her tattoo comes to life again as Tassir, her pit viper familiar, and joins Tanrir once more to keep an eye on the party. She's about to send them off to meet with Vesper when Riva demands to be paid for her contract with Queen Aurelia, Saphira's grandmother. Queen Saphira looks up Riva's contract and laughs at the detail that Aurelia hired her as a mercenary after Riva tried to sell her a clergyman's hat, pretending it was a holy relic. Saphira then informs Riva that technically she still owes Vire 2 more months of service, since time spent napping inside a mirror does not count.
Riva begrudgingly joins the party, but not before flipping off the queen and nearly getting killed on the spot. Later, Gideon tips Riva some gold coins for putting on a good show, while Iria and Tanrir grow more wary of their new teammate. Outside Vesper's mansion, the heroes run into Risk and Bagheera, the con men who originally conscripted them into the queen's service. Risk explains that he is destined to work for Saphira for life after he was caught stealing from the crown, and that the heroes should count themselves lucky that their job has an end date. In a characteristically petty move, Gideon lights Risk's jacket on fire, and a brief scuffle ensues.
When the dust settles, Risk and Bagheera leave hand in hand, and the party continues into Vesper's manor. Danny hands them off to the skeletal alchemist himself, and the heroes follow Vesper into his library to be briefed on their next mission. They are to be teleported to a quaint little village named Sosalia, on the outskirts of Sanguine Sylvis, a forest in which Vesper believes an enclave of werewolves is alive and well. They will arrive 2 nights before the full moon, so, with any luck, the people of Sosalia can help them prepare for what they are to face in the forest.
Vesper stresses that all that is known for certain about lycanthropy is how infectious it is and how characteristic extreme acts of violence are. He compares lycanthropy to the mundane rabies virus and theorizes that they are so similar, the curse may have been forged from it. He warns the heroes that while becoming a vampire must be intentional, catching lycanthropy is as easy as a deep bite or scratch, intentional or otherwise.
Vesper arms the party with a silver whistle, enchanted with necromancy, which is able to temporarily stun canines of all kinds, including werewolves. However, if used more than once every 24 hours, this valuable tool runs the risk of exploding in the user's face. A poltergeist who makes his home in Vesper's manor takes a shine to Gideon, and sneaks her a useful book from the alchemist's library to help her.
The heroes assemble in Vesper's courtyard, standing at the center of a ring of sigils, and steady themselves for what is to come. The world vanishes from beneath their feet, and after a dizzying trip through the portal, they find themselves watching the sun set over a forest flush with red oaks, the trees brilliant with autumn colors. A little smattering of buildings crouches in the shadow of the forest, the nearest of which is called the Covenant Inn.
And that's all the story so far.
But truth be told, we've got so much more to tell. Thank you for listening. We hope you found this summary enjoyable.
It took us so long to put this recap together that the next episode is already finished.
We shall upload it post-haste so you don't even have to wait to find out what happens next. See you on the other side.
Bye.
Bye.